This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. Every year, we in the media wait with bated breath for the Auditor General's report. Part one of this year's report was tabled in Parliament on Monday. In 2013, the practice of splitting the report was made to split the report in three parts. Now, this newly minted Auditor General's first report was tabled, as I said, on Monday. She is, of course, Tan Sri Dr. Madina Mohammed. She reported that all 25 ministries were given a top rating. Now, by comparison, in 2015, it was 16, and the year before, it was 20 of 24 ministries. Now, on the line, we have Tricia Yeo, Chief Operating Officer of the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, otherwise known as IDEAS. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Tricia, what I want to begin with asking you is whether this report, can we use this as a gauge of Tan Sri Madina's style and approach and compare to her predecessors, Haji Amrin Buang and Ahmad Nordin Zakaria?
Hi, good morning, Sharad, and thanks for having me on this morning on BFM. Firstly, I think it's good work by Tan Sri Dr. Madina. I mean, we recall that before she came on board, there was a lot of speculation as to whether she would do a good job, whether she would be transparent. So I think first off, she should be commended about her work in, you know, pushing forward this report as the previous Auditor Generals have done. So we can congratulate her for that. But having said that, of course, we also should recognize that it's actually the work of the many, many officers within the Auditor General's office that have been doing the investigations over the year.
So you think that she's largely gotten over the hump that was there, some controversy around what her husband had said, as well as whether she was qualified for the job. Now, I want to ask you if the report, the things in the report that struck you in particular.
Yes, as you said earlier in the introduction, this is the same kind of issues that we face each year, each time it's tabled. There's repeated uproar and repeated recommendations. But this time it struck me that many of the programs were actually programs run by some sort of government-linked company or other under the ministry. So you have, you know, a whole range of programs like under the Tekun, you know, credit financing scheme, entrepreneur community card. And the other one that also struck me was the fact that many of them actually were supposed to help the poor in some way or other, you know, small companies, entrepreneurs. So I'm not sure whether this means that they have actually looked more into the GLCs this time round, or just that there were more discrepancies in these sorts of, you know, vague arrangements between government and companies. And of course, the other thing which I also observed is that it's directly related to public services that could have been avoided. So we're talking about education, so the construction of secondary schools, healthcare, the construction of a complex in the Tunku Ampuan Rahimah Hospital in Klang, public transport. So it seems that all of these allocations that government means to use to help either small companies or the public in some way, these are not going into the right places. I would look more into the GLCs, both at the federal and state levels, to examine further.
So one of the things, because we see is a kind of discrepancy between the excellent rating of the ministries and then all these stories that the media, of course, is feeding on that suggest that things aren't tip-top and excellent. Or have we got it wrong? Is it that you can be excellent and still have problems?
I don't know what the excellent rating is actually based on. I mean, it does seem to be an improvement, but as you also correctly pointed out earlier, I mean, that's not really significant because prior to that, 24 ministries had also achieved excellent. And excellent, you know, we could have a relatively low barrier, and one needs to look at the details. As we always say, the devil's in the detail. But I think I'd like to point out that, you know, each time it comes out, you know, it's almost like a bore for us researchers who are looking into these reports, because one is that we know that the rules and regulations exist, but it seems that the enforcement officers are not really doing their job. So the question is, you know, where is the rule of law here? And secondly, I think that there are many more rules that could be introduced to improve things further. And whether or not, you know, there are 353 proposals to remedy the weaknesses that were put into the report, whether or not year after year, these proposals and recommendations are actually being taken up. And, you know, we at Ideas have done lots of research. I mean, all of these have been submitted to government. We know what to do. There's international standards out there to look at. The EU is a good example. And it's not really rocket science. It's just about having the right transparent mechanisms, adequate procurement planning, you know, making sure that these things are put online, transparency. I mean, at the end of the day, you want companies to be able to compete and provide better value for money, therefore reducing the cost overall that government spends on largely, you know, construction and procurement projects.
Tricia, does this go back to the question of our civil service, the quality of the people being recruited, the political will to hold people accountable for their actions or their omissions, or even in some instances, maybe criminal activity, considering that the civil service has been largely politicized over the years and is seen as a vote bank for the government of the day? I mean, is there a curious mix of factors that go into the intractable state of the civil service when it comes to improvements?
Yeah, I think it does go back to the quality of public administration today. And that's like a huge topic altogether, right? I think one needs to recognize that many of them actually do face the politicization, meaning that, you know, if you have letters coming from the top or instructions that are written down on letters downward, one would ask the question, you know, what can the civil servants actually do? Are they empowered enough to put their foot down and say no to their political masters, as perhaps in the past they were able to do? Because, you know, which leads to the second thing about whether they have been professionalized enough to actually understand the requirements of what the procurement actually needs. So you don't want just paper pushers, but you want people who are, you know, intimately, you know, recognizing of what the requirements are. And I think this is something that has changed over the years.
Now, we also have in the news the fact that the statement made by the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission that it'd be looking into the report for possible instances of corrupt practices. Now, has the Auditor General's report been used in this way before, and has it been successfully used?
I actually don't recall that the MACC looks into the AG's report directly, but I could be wrong. But I suppose my point would be that, yes, it's excellent that they are doing these investigations independently. And, you know, again, kudos to the MACC for trying very hard. But at the end of the day, are there punitive measures that are leveled at the people who are responsible? We've heard many times that, you know, the ministries are going to be called up as a result of the Auditor General's report. But again, the public isn't really made aware as to what happens after that. So what is the follow-up? What is the enforcement here? And finally, I also want to point out that every time the Auditor General's report is tabled, they do have a briefing session for the media. So I think this one is actually happening tomorrow.
Now, finally, Tricia, the story that keeps on giving, 1MDB, it's in the news again for that default on the repayment to IPIC. The Auditor General has come out to say that the National Audit Department can only investigate 1MDB if Putrajaya gives it the green light. Do you think that the absence of a 1MDB is a blow to the credibility of the AG's report?
One needs to understand that it's not exhaustive, so the audits are actually not done on 100% of the different agencies under the ministries. I think given the fact that 1MDB has certainly cast a huge shadow on the country, the audit department should have been given the green light to look into 1MDB and other GLCs that are causing problems.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.